Hey everyone, welcome back to the Athlete CEO podcast, where we empower you to unlock the greatest driver of your net worth, your human capital. I'm your host, Eric Averill, and I'm joined by my co-host and brother, Brandon Averill. We are the co-founders of AWM Capital, where we partner with athletes, founders, and VCs to unlock the full potential of their wealth for maximum impact. Each week on Athlete CEO, we feature select excerpts from interviews with the trailblazers, the elite, those at the top of their field and the best at their craft, with the goal to curate the best practices that you can leverage to unlock your human capital. On today's episode, we're bringing you the beginning of our conversation with a great friend of ours, Joe Schmidt. Joe is the former Notre Dame football captain, an investor at Accel, which is a venture capital firm that has funded 59 unicorns and 7 decacorns over its life. It includes the likes of Facebook, Slack, Dropbox, Spotify, and Ethos Life, to name a few. Joe has since departed Accel to join the portfolio company Ethos Life, where he now runs strategy, sales, and partnerships. Ethos is no slouch themselves, raising over $100 million from Sequoia, Accel, Google Ventures, Stanford, Goldman Sachs, and celebrities Jay-Z and none other than the Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. And so in this installment, Joe takes us inside the world of venture. What have been the challenges of moving from investor to operator, and why skin in the game may be the most important ingredient when choosing who to take advice from or where to invest your capital?
Eric, I just love the intensity because, you know, one of my favorite things that came out of this episode was just the disruption, right? We got tech in general as a disruptor, but, you know, specifically around the insurance industry, I know you and I sit here and we'll get on a tangent and banter back and forth about the need for disruption in that industry. It kind of makes us sick to see the premiums or the commissions they get paid to a lot of these life insurance agents. So I know it just resonated with both of us as we started to talk about that disruption and definitely took us down the path of the financial industry and what we've seen over the past decade plus of disruption in our business and even further in the disruption in sports in general when it comes to finances. So I thought it was a fantastic discussion. I can't wait for people to hear it.
Yeah, the other thing that totally stood out to me was also just Joe talking about his experience going from being an investor of you know, playing a little bit of Monday morning quarterback to being in the trenches, to being an operator, having to actually manage a team, make decisions, and pivot as quickly as possible, and just what it means to be an operator in the day-to-day muck. And really, at the end of the day, what makes some of the best investors circling back to an Accel of the world is so often they are operators that are now investing their capital.
Yeah, I agree, Eric. I mean, I think, right, as operators ourselves, we know the hard-fought lessons, and unfortunately, they can't be learned in books. As much as we read, as much as we try to learn about other stories, right, when you have to make payroll or potentially are up against missing payroll, or make a decision what to invest in, what not to. You know, are we going to pour a bunch of money into podcasting? Are we going to pour a bunch of money into marketing? Now Joe's on that side. It's no longer like, oh, here's my advice, my consulting advice as an investor. But now I'm the operator. Rubber meets the road. You know, I got a lot of people relying upon me is what Joe pointed to. And, you know, we feel that. So I know it resonated with us. I'm sure it's going to resonate with, you know, all the people that are listening to this that are operators or those that want to be operators, kind of get a little taste into what they're looking at.
Yeah. And I think we've heard it before. It's like the social media consultant who's got no social media followers, right? Trying to get you to hire them. And we say that on the investment side, it's amazing. It's, you know, don't tell me what you think I should do with my portfolio. Show me your portfolio. Show me your track record. And it's something we're passionate about is at the end of the day, we're handling people's financial lives. And it's when we're, you know, responsible for deploying capital, I think there's a lot of confidence coming from us is we actually understand when we're looking into putting money in and investments, you know, what does it take to run a business? What does it really mean to do that due diligence? And so the skin in the game thing was something that definitely was front and center for me. And you guys are going to love this as the audience. There is so much jam-packed. Obviously, you can see how excited we are, what a dynamic person Joe is. And so without further ado, here's our conversation with Joe Schmidt. Bring us up to speed a little bit. What exactly is Ethos and what are you doing over there?
Ethos, we're a next generation life insurance company. So a company started 5 years ago, the whole premise being that buying and selling life insurance is a fundamentally broken process. You know, it takes 10 to 15 weeks. You get stuck with a needle. You've got to talk to an agent that you may or may not want to talk to. And it's just not, it's an archaic process, right? So we flipped that whole model on its head. We underwrite people instantly after a very quick online 5 to 10 minute application. You can talk to an agent or you don't have to. It's really up to you. And so we empower people to buy how they want. And really, you know, our whole mission is to try to protect those next million families because there's a massive coverage gap where people should have life insurance. But because that process is so bad, they end up not getting it. So that's what the company is doing.
Yeah, that's a great background. It's funny, obviously, Brandon and I are partners and co-founders of AWM Capital, where we manage people's net worth on a daily basis, and life insurance is exactly what you said. We know it's so fundamental as a protection for families, yet the process is just archaic. And so it seems like the industry is ripe for disruption, just insurance in general. We're seeing that, I think, on some of the auto insurance. Can you give us, our audience, just a background of, you know, like why you guys are attacking that industry, what you think the opportunity is? Would love to hear a lot more about that.
Yeah. So I guess we can talk, I guess, as deep as you want about the insurance space. You know, when I was at my last job, I'd spent a bunch of time across all the different startups, across all the different lines. But really, when it comes to life insurance, you've got these companies and these distribution models that really haven't changed in 150, you know, sometimes close to 200 years. So there's these legacy infrastructures where you've got a whole bunch of different things playing. Like one, you know, these tech stacks that are employed at some of the largest insurance companies are so archaic. They're written in coding languages that literally don't exist anymore. Like, yeah, at some points, I've literally talked to companies where it's written in code that the guy who invented the code has been dead 30 years, but they have to maintain it because, you know, information exists on this system that they need to access. And so when you have that and these companies also grow through acquisitions or, you know, whatever it might be, it ends up becoming this amalgamation of different technologies that they're trying to stitch together. So that's something that really, you know, slows down innovation there. They also, like, obviously there's the inertia of being a massive, massive company, you know, and you look at the Fortune, you know, 50, like how many of them are insurance carriers, right? They're massive businesses. And then you look at, you know, the channel conflict that's present at, you know, most of these insurance companies. They've been doing business for, you know, 150 years selling through an insurance agent. So maybe they're captive, maybe they're not, but their product has been built for that channel. Right. So they're not meant to be selling online direct to a consumer. They don't know how to do that yet. So you kind of have all of those things, you know, coming together. And then simultaneously, you've got, you know, kind of the economy or rather the environment in 2020, which is, you know, super low interest rates, which compress profit margins for them. So they're trying to find different ways to make money. You know, to make their, you know, profits work. So they're more open to looking at new distribution models and more open to working with startups, I think that's one of the reasons that, people like us are existing. And then number two, there's so many different ways that, we can now look at data. And so if you look at, you know, like the last 15 years in fintech, you see a bunch of really like foundational, businesses being built. You know, like you got like the Stripes of the world for payments. You've got Plaid that allows you to, connect your bank account. There's so many different things that kind of enable, you know, these next generation evolutions in technology. And for us, we are able to use some of those things to, you know, access different data sets that otherwise would not be, you know, able to be accessed, you know, 10 years ago. Or there may be data that exists on someone that maybe didn't exist 10 years ago. And that can inform our pricing decisions in ways that were before not possible. And we're not shackled to those legacy tech infrastructures like some of our incumbent competitors, right? So obviously there's a long way for this industry to go, but I think those are some of the high level trends as to why insurance is kind of ongoing this, you know, really rapid transformation period. So anyway.
Yeah, I find that obviously super interesting. The fascination, I mean, life insurance is just not a fun process for most people to go through. So it's not surprising that, you know, this is an industry you guys are attacking. And I mean, just hearing the depth of knowledge, I go back to, you know, us sitting in a conference room at Excel when we reconnected a little bit and you talking about jumping into your whole thesis on the insurance side. So I definitely want to get to your experience at Excel and what that was like and everything. But I thought it might be fun just to hear, you know, your unique experience being on the investing side in this space, but then also flipping over to the operating side and maybe contrast, like, what are the differences? I'm sure they're vast. You know, what were your challenges in leaping over? You already had some of that institutional knowledge from your research on the investing side, but what's it like to be on the operating side?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think, one of the like toughest things about jumping in is, you know, when you're sitting in the investing chair or you're kind of, you know, as like a coach to a player, it's really easy to see something when you're, you know, sitting in the press box. And, you know, I'll use the football analogy, like play action pass becomes really easy to dissect when you're, 100 feet in the air and everything's clear. But when you're in the trenches, it's such a different experience and it's so much harder to get things done. And the models are just less clear. So I think transitioning from more of from a coach type thing, advisor type role, and then jumping into the fray, you got to realize that it's just obviously it's a lot more difficult to make these changes than you think. You got to recognize, like, you can just kind of say like, oh, like this is obvious, you should go do whatever this, you know, thing is. And when you're an investor, it's like, oh, well, you're a startup, like you guys can just move so much faster and so much more efficiently than your competitors. But that's obviously not always true, right? There's a reason that these companies are, it's unbelievably, successful and have been, around for 100 plus years as institutions. They do a great job. So I think like that for me has been like a big transition, is just trying to understand what it's like to really get things done, versus just like kind of looking at things and analyzing, what needs to happen.
It's fascinating. And I would bet, I mean, it's why we see also so many operators, right, go back to the venture side and do the coaching, I would imagine. But maybe, yeah, if you could share with us a little bit too, I mean, how much you go into it, your story of being at Excel, showing up, and I think it would be valuable for a lot of our listeners just to hear about how'd you end up at Excel? Obviously the athlete background, how much did that benefit you? And then what was it like? I think so many people think, hey, I'll utilize my connection, show up, and it's all going to be, rosy. So I'd love for you, if you're willing, to share a little bit about, what Excel was like when you showed up.
Yeah, no, I'll make some fun of myself. So, I was fortunate when I was at Notre Dame. I spent some time as an undergrad and then post-grad working for our endowment. And that was really my first foray into investing. Try and understand, really what venture capital was, and everything like that. But you're really indirect investing into it, in that you're investing into a fund, and then that fund is making investments in companies, right? So it's like you're really detached. And when I came to Excel, it was obviously just like a massive, massive learning curve for me. There was, like, I kind of almost, when I tell people about it, I say, it was like standing on like a cliff, you're like rock climbing, and you've got to, like, to continue going up, there's this sheer wall of just like granite or whatever, like there's no holds whatsoever. And then 13 feet above you is like a ledge that you've got to somehow jump and grab, and then like manage to like pull yourself up by your fingertips. That's what it felt like joining Excel.
you know, like, and let me just be very clear. I do not have a vertical leap like that. you know, like that was like how typical that was. And it's kind of just like a, you know, very fiercely independent type role in investing. And I think that's like a common misconception is like, you know, from the outside looking in, it's like, okay, well, like, you know, how hard could it really be to go make investments in startups? Or, you know, hey, like I'm, you know, I'm XYZ, I play for XYZ club, or, you know, I'm a really well-known guy, you know, I can get access to these deals. And it's like, well, you're really not getting access to the deals you want to be getting access to if they're coming to you. You know, you got to know that this is a really competitive, you know, community. And so that was like, I think a huge learning curve for me. And then, you know, for us, like, you know, at Excel, and like, that was one of the things that I tried to do was, you know, very quickly, I realized I need to figure out something where I can start to carve out a niche for myself. And that's how I found insurance and a couple other categories, you know, where I really spent a ton of time so that I could, you know, make that leap.
Wow, so much good stuff. We hope that that you guys have enjoyed this segment as much as we did. Industries with conflicts of interest are ripe for the opportunity, and it's not until you've played the game that you are truly equipped to give advice. Great takeaways there from Joe. And you guys aren't going to want to miss next week's episode, where Joe breaks down how professional athletes should actually approach investing. What's the process that it takes for Excel to actually write a check and fund one of these companies? And then why getting access to venture is not even good enough. It goes far beyond getting the access to make sure that you're getting the right terms as well. And so head over to athleteceo.com, subscribe to the newsletter to make sure you're getting access to all the insider tools. And if you guys are liking what you're hearing on this podcast, and you'd like to hear some bite-sized discussion on timely financial news and investment topics that are going to help you maximize your net worth, check out our other podcast, AWM Insights, on Apple Podcasts as well. It's a quick 5 to 10 minutes, jam-packed full of useful information. And until next time, stay humble, stay hungry, and always be a pro.